details, nitpicky details. It seems to me the more I pay attention to the nitpicky details in fishing, the luckier I seem to get.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
So the weather has been impacting the fishing I've been doing. I don't know about you, but we're entering the dog days of summer, man. And water temps are headed towards 80 degrees again. My running tally now is at 36,194 caught and released. But, I mean, it's been slow since I broke 36,000. It's been slow. I wanted to do that in June. And I made it, but since then it's been slow. I wanted to have 36,000 by the end of May, and I made it with a day to spare. I think I was on 36,005 coming into June 1st, but we've been through June. We're halfway through July as we record this, and I've only picked up 189. And I know, oh, boo-hoo, only 189 bass in 6 weeks. But it's my mission to get better and better and better. Which brings me to the topic of today's podcast, which is luck versus skill in fishing. What is that?
That's a Furby.
Okay. It's always causing a distraction.
I'm pretty lucky to have one of those.
Yeah.
But go on. Tell me about luck in fishing, because I think it's got a lot to do with it.
Well, depending on the angler, it does. I agree with that. I mean, the novice angler going out and having a stellar day, there's a lot of luck involved there. But I've been working for four decades trying to eliminate as much luck as I can from my fishing, because my job is to control the things I can control and apply a conscious, intelligent approach to the things I cannot control. And I've talked about this before. I mean, I can control how I work my lure. I can control if I run a top water, a mid depth, or a bottom bouncer. I can control the quality of my line and the quality of my knot and the sharpness of my hook. And if I run with the current or against it, any of those factors, but I cannot control the direction of the wind. I cannot control the amount of sunlight or the angle of the sun on the water or how much cloud cover there is, or if a cold front blows in. Those things I can't control. So rather than stress about those, I have a very calculated approach, which I've developed over decades of doing this, that help me confront those conditions and come out with a positive outcome. There's a common phrase out there, and I hear it all the time. The guy said it the other day. They were working on an engine and that wasn't running right on an outboard. And these guys aren't boat mechanics. They're just friends of mine. And so he messed with the firing order, and it ran a whole lot better. And his buddy said, "Hey, I'd rather be lucky than good." I don't understand that. Now, I've heard that saying a lot. I always cringe because I'm a tournament guy. And I would rather be good than lucky, because the guy who wins the tournament on luck cannot go out and duplicate unless he gets lucky again. What are the odds of that? Because he's fishing a guy against guys that have a calculated, dedicated, intelligent approach, because they're not relying on luck. They're relying on the knowledge that they've acquired over years of doing this. I've been writing this stuff down for four decades, so I can eliminate as much luck as possible. Take a guy that goes to a tournament on a lake he's never fished before, ends up winning the tournament. And we've seen that happen before. Never been there before. He ends up winning the tournament. You've never been here before. What was your approach? 9 times out of 10, they'll just shrug and go, "Hey, I just got lucky." Now, one of two things here. Either they actually believe that themselves, or they don't want to tell people what they figured out in case they come back to that lake again. And that's my guess. I'm thinking 9 times out of 10, they're banking on the club coming back to that that lake for another derby, and they don't want people to know how they caught fish. So they just say, I just got lucky. Let me put out something here, and I'm really not going out on a limb when I say this, because I don't believe anybody's plunking down a good healthy chunk of change to enter a bass tournament thinking, I hope I get lucky and win. I don't think people are doing that. I know I'm not. If I pay money to fish a competition, it's because I believe I have the skill sets to go out that day on that body of water. And if I do my level best to control what I can control and have a committed approach, intelligent approach to those things I can't control, that I'll come out on top or hopefully very near the top. I don't rely on luck. I will admit, sometimes there's luck involved. Just the other day, I was just fishing a local lake, and there's one dock on this lake. One, it's a private lake. One single dock. And that's where you have to put your boat in. So I always fish all the way around this lake. And when I come back, before I pull out, I'm going to pitch a jig to that dock because it drops right off underneath it. So I pitch my jig and I miss the mark. I didn't think I landed close enough to the dock. Wasn't happy with my cast. So I go to crank it right in and my rod loads up and I catch a 2.5 pound largemouth. I think there was a little luck involved there because I thought I had to be closer to that dock. Now this water is fairly clear. So apparently if that fish was relating to that dock and there's nothing else there, he probably saw that jig drop through the water column and shot out and got it. I didn't think I was close enough to the dock. That's why I immediately started cranking in, because I thought I messed up the cast, but my rod immediately loaded up and I caught a nice fish. I considered that a little bit of luck involved there because I didn't execute well on my presentation. I think in that instance, there was a little luck involved, and I'll tell you what, I'll take it, but I'm not going to count on that next time. Next time, I'm going to drop that jig right against the face of that dock so it drops back vertically right from that edge. But in that particular scenario, it did work out. It's like I kind of equate it to professional poker players. Now, these guys are playing cards. You know, the guys that are at the top of that game, the professional poker players, Texas Hold'em and all those guys that make a living doing that, do you think they're trusting their livelihood on luck?
No, of course not.
Of course not. These guys, first off, they're all very good at keeping track of things in their head, watching the cards that have fallen, watching the cards that have already played. They're calculating the odds. These guys are all mathematicians. They're very good at the numbers game. And as they see what cards have been played, they're playing and calculating the odds on what's remaining on the deck based on what hand they've been dealt. And it's a risk-reward scenario. They're going to play them close to the vest if they believe it's a long shot based on what cards have already been played out. And if they're going for something like a flush or a four of a kind, and they know those cards are still in the deck and it's dwindled down, odds are in their favor. It's a low risk, high reward scenario. These guys watch the cards and they're very good at what they do. They don't make a successful career on luck. You know, the guys that are trusting luck are the guys who are going home, because the guys who calculated the odds and measured the risk and rewards are going home with the money from the guys that were counting on luck. That's just reality. Now, every once in a while, luck plays a hand, but that is not the norm. If you're relying on luck, the odds are way, way, way against you. And it's the same deal with tournament fishing. Luck is a four-letter word, in my opinion. And I've quoted Doug Stange before on one of the things that he said that stuck with me over the years. And he was talking about details, which is, again, the whole point of keeping my journals is to record all these details so I can read the water, read the conditions, and swing the odds in my favor based on past experience, calculating the odds, understanding how fish relate to certain environmental conditions, and the presentations I'm going to put in front of them. It's all in the details. And he said, and I quote, details nitpicky details. It seems to me the more I pay attention to the nitpicky details in fishing, the luckier I seem to get, unquote. And so many people think, man, that guy's lucky, you know? Yeah, what a career he's made on being lucky. No, nobody does that. So how do you eliminate the luck factor in fishing? You know, what's the real secret there? The secret, and it's no secret, it's in preparation, folks. And all the detail I include in those journal entries have helped me define a very well-defined, calculated approach, no matter what the conditions, because in 40 years of doing this and writing it down, I don't think there's a single scenario I haven't run into countless times. Everything from bluebird, sunny days where the air is dead still, high pressure systems, to a front coming in and the clouds and the sky getting dark and the sun disappearing and a chop getting on the surface and the leaves flipping up on the trees and, oh man, they're going to bite for a while. You know, you learn to recognize these cues that nature gives you if you increase your circles of awareness. That's something the Indians used to talk about, circles of awareness. That's why they were so good with their hunting skills. They were aware of their surroundings. If you've got one of those days when you're headed out to fish and there's a lot of deer moving in the morning, there's a lot of wildlife crossing the road, there's a lot of birds in the air, there's a lot of wildlife activity, guess what? Fish are moving too. These are simple clues in nature that everybody sees, but with some people, it just does not register. And I try to be cognizant and very aware of my surroundings, my circles of awareness, whenever I'm on the water or when I'm in the woods hunting, just watching the show in my deer stand and spending dawn to dusk in that stand, taking in the entire day. And if a deer comes through, I don't want to miss it. So increase your circles of awareness. That will help eliminate the luck factor because it tunes you in to what's going on in the natural world, and fish are a part of that. And preparation, I cannot overstress being prepared. I'll give you a perfect example of that. There's two tournaments my partner and I won on lakes our club had never been to before. And one of them was actually a local lake that a lot of the club members fished. Now, I had fished it when I lived up in the area where the tournament was held, hour or more from my house. I don't live up in the Saratoga area anymore, but when I did, I used to fish this lake periodically, not a lot. I did go back once or twice with my son. It was a pretty private lake, but we knew a guy who owned property on it. He let us launch right through his yard. And at the time, I had a small 14-foot V-bottom with a 15-horse four-stroke on it. That was the boat I used there. I had other boats, but that was the one I used at that lake because I was launching across the guy's yard, and I'm not going to put a bass boat in off of somebody's yard over a stone wall. But 14-foot V-hull, aluminum, yeah, I can do that. And it was actually a pretty decent place to launch, save for going over the stone wall, but it was low, almost flat. And my son and I used to fish that for crappie and bass. I think we went there maybe three times ever, but the last time I had been there, when the club announced that we were going to that lake, my partner asked me, do you know anything about that lake? I said, good grief, I have to check. I think it's been like 15 years since I've been on that body of water. And I'm sure a lot has changed. So I was familiar with the layout of the lake. We went there and pre-fished it two different days before that tournament. And this is where preparation comes in. Again, a lot of the club members fished it routinely and knew the lake extremely well. I went in and treated it like a brand new fishery because it'd been 15 years since I'd even seen it. And I found a spot. I caught a 5-pound largemouth on a skirted bass jig and trailer, and we caught some other fish on my Texas rigs. It was a summer tournament. This is a grass lake. So I filed that away. We went back and pre-fished it a second day. We did check that spot, and man, caught another big one and several others. So we said, all right, this is where we're going to start the tournament and see how the day progresses. However, I did not know it. I had no clue. We had found one of the community holes that everybody knew about, apparently, except us. And but we got a good draw. We were like number three in the takeoff. We got there first, so people gave us room, and we actually ended up winning that tournament. First time our club had ever been there. We set a new weight record for the highest winning weight in the club's history. Now, it's been broken twice since then, but at that point in time, nobody had ever broken the 20-pound barrier with a limit of five bass, and we did it that day. Just, we had 20.24, 20.25. It was 20 and a quarter, but we had prepared. We had eliminated the luck factor by going there, finding an area, expanding on the area, and agreeing to start there and see if it played. And it played. The fish were there all 3 days that we fished it, and the third one being that day of the tournament. So was there luck involved? To a degree, yes, because for whatever reason, those fish were still there. Now, there was a hump in this lake, and that's what we were fishing. That's why the fish were there. The fact that it's a community hole that we had no knowledge of speaks to the fact that fish are generally always caught there. So I don't think there was a lot of luck involved. There may have been some luck involved in the fact that we found that spot, but I found it by watching my electronics. And I knew there was a hump there. I just didn't know it was a spot everybody knew about, but I was fortunate to find it. So we prepared, and that's why we won. Another tournament we had on a lake, I can't remember the name of the lake. It was a lake in Massachusetts, and our club president set it up the first weekend in June, which is Massachusetts Free Fishing Weekend. So nobody in the club had to buy a license. He held an open tournament on Saturday where anybody could fish it, and a couple locals fished it. Then our club members only tournament was on Sunday. That gave people a day to kind of get familiar with the lake. My tournament partner and I went a day earlier. We went there Friday and bought out-of-state licenses and got to know the lake, marked the spots where we caught fish, which is where we caught them on Saturday. And I think we finished fourth in the open event. But I talked to the winner, the guy who was the local, who knew the lake really well, and who had, he had no dog in the fight the next day. And I asked him, I said, how'd you catch your fish? And he said, all I did was throw a Senko. And I left it at that.
There it is.
There it is. There's your sign. That's not something we had thrown when we pre-fished it on Friday. And it's not something we had thrown on Saturday, the day of the open event. But that's the first thing I put in the water on Sunday, the morning of the tournament. We went to the areas where we had caught our best fish. And I started with the Senko. And right off the bat, caught a 3-pounder, and we said, okay, this is what we're doing, and we won that tournament. Club had never been there. We prepared for one more day ahead of everybody else, and I was brazen enough to walk up to the guy that won on Saturday and asked him what he caught him on. Apparently, he was honest with me. I got good information, but hey, he knew the lake really well. He knew what they liked. He could have told me get lost, but he was honest, and it made a difference. We won the tournament. So the point I'm trying to make here is, here's two lakes that our club had never been to before. Did we get lucky in those tournaments? I think not. I think we had a calculated approach wherein we went and we fished both lakes actually 2 days prior to the tournament. I mean, the first lake I talked about, we fished two different weekends before the tournament actually was held. The one in Massachusetts, it was the 2 days prior to the day of the tournament. Our club at that time did not have any rule about pre-fishing the day before tournament. And a good thing, or otherwise he wouldn't have held that open tournament the day before our club event, because that would have breached the club rules. But there is a rule in place now. Nobody's allowed to pre-fish the day before a tournament. 2 days before, you're fine, but don't fish the day before. And with our year-ending classic championship, nobody on the water the week prior to the championship. That just kind of levels the playing field. And I'm all for that. Let's all go in cold and see what we can figure out. The reason we won those two tournaments is because we applied ourselves. We invested the time and tried to get to know the lake and how the fish respond to different presentations. We did our best to control the things we could control, applied ourselves and our knowledge to the things that we couldn't control, and did our best to eliminate luck as much as possible from the equation. It's like deer hunting. The more I study deer hunting, the more I get into it, the luckier I seem to get. I'll tell you a little story about my wife, who I love dearly, who saved my tournament career by teaching me how to clean my live well.
Oh, yes. She, I remember that story.
She also made me a better deer hunter, because years ago, when I was 20 years into writing my journals, I was not anywhere I wanted to be as a deer hunter, 10 years into my journals. And I was always lamenting, you know, the why can't I, you know, I wanted to be that guy that got two or three deer every year, because I knew those guys. And I would get one, and then I go a few more years, and then I get one, then I go a few more years, and I just, it's frustrating, because I want to get better at this. And my wife just looked at me and said very bluntly, if you studied deer hunting the way you studied fishing, you would get better. And I kind of laughed that off, and I said, oh, you don't understand. Fishing is easy. Deer hunting is difficult. That's what I thought. And I honestly believe that. I honestly believe that fishing was easy, because it had gotten much easier for me, well, much more productive for me, because of the way I had applied myself in studying it. And I just viewed deer hunting as a much more difficult proposition. Had I thought about it and kept an open mind, I would have realized that those guys I knew that were getting two or three deer every year, some of the best deer hunters I knew, could not catch a fish to save their life. And I'm like, I don't get that. Fishing's easy. Well, it appeared easy for me and to me, because I had invested so much time into it, figuring out how to make it more productive. And I was still in the process of learning that. But where I had been 10 years prior to keeping the journals, my numbers just doubled and tripled and quadrupled. And just, I was learning so much. Well, turns out I started reading everything I could on deer hunting. I was hunting blind. I had no mentors for deer hunting. Nobody in my family hunted. I had no mentors. So I started reading everything I could, reading more into the hunting magazines, buying books, watching videos. And I went out with a few deer hunters, and who I thought were really, really good, hunted with them at different places and different times. I learned stuff from everybody. The thing is, the more I got into it, the more I got out of it. The more I got off the ground and started using elevated stands and paying more attention to where my scent was, and paying attention to wind direction, and learning how deer move, how the thermals work in the morning, how they work in the evening. All these things that I was reading about, I could just simply go out and apply. And lo and behold, she was right, because I became that guy that gets two deer every year on average. Some years three, some years one. I aspired to be and became that guy because I took my wife's advice. So guys, if you're married, listen to your wife. She's right. I'm just going to put that out there. This year will be our 44th year on August 30th. Yes, I remember our anniversary. I remember those dates because I'm a numbers guy. I count deer, I count turkeys, I count fish. I can't help it. That's just the way my brain's wired. Well, I'm a numbers guy.
If I said 43, 44 is coming up. How many years?
No, it'll be 44 years this year.
44
We're years. Married in 1980.
I wasn't born till 81.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy cow. I could be your dad.
You could be.
Yeah.
You could be Pappy.
Yeah. All right. We're
Pappy,
done with that.
Pappy Roy.
Yeah, we're done with that.
Pappy.
But I started paying, it's the same thing with the fishing, the details. I started paying attention to the details in deer hunting, and my success really, really went up tremendously. And yeah, now I'm that guy that, you know, averages two a year, and younger guys that I've taught to hunt and shoot look up to me as this great hunter. And I'm like, yeah, hey, I know where I came from. Okay. I do okay, but there are great hunters and I don't put myself in that category. I think I'm a stronger fisherman, but I'll tell you what, I enjoy the deer hunting, the turkey hunting. We've talked about that. I enjoy it all. The whole outdoors. God gave us all these creatures to have dominion over so that we can eat nutritious meals. But it's the love of the chase, the pursuit of the fish, the pursuit of the wildlife that always keeps us going back. And yeah, we all want to fill our game bag. We all want to make that harvest. But any day you're out there is a good day. I can honestly say I've never had a bad day fishing, because even if the results were poor, I was doing what I loved. I was in my element. I was in my happy place, and that is outdoors, whether it's in the woods or on the water. So again, the whole point of discussing all this, and I hoped it helped, is trying to eliminate, you know, luck as much as possible from people out there who are trying to get better. Luck versus skill in fishing. In the early days, I think there's a lot of luck involved. But the more you apply yourself, the more you educate yourself and try to learn about fishing by watching videos, reading books, listening to podcasts. All these resources are out there that didn't exist 40 years ago when I started keeping a journal. We had a few fishing shows on TV. That's it. And we had VHS tapes. That's what exists. Now, this was pre-internet. You couldn't Google anything. You know, Yeah, the only time word people use the word Google was if somebody was acting weird and all googly-eyed. That's the only time you heard Google. Huh. And yeah, you remember those phrases?
Oh, I do. Googly okay. Eyes.
But you grew up with the internet, right?
Not quite. I mean, yes, in a way. Internet was, we got it in my house when I was in eighth grade, probably. We got dial-up back then. You know, and oh, then yeah. We had, and then I, you know, so I guess I grew up with it in my adolescent years.
Well,
I
let's suppose. Just go date ourselves here. When we got married, there were no cell phones. You had a rotary phone. If you were cool, you had a push button phone.
The rotary phones were the worst, because if you made a mistake about nine yeah, numbers, and you just start
hit the
over
button
again,
and start all over. Yeah, push button phones were ultra modern. We had those, but. And then they went to cordless phones, you know, but you had to stay near the receiver. You couldn't walk
too far away. Don't walk too far away. And if somebody
hold on, let me walk back to the kitchen. I can't hear you.
And if somebody had a scanner, they could hear you next door on those things as well.
Yeah. So things have really progressed. I mean, if people want to eliminate luck as much as possible from the fishing, utilize the resources that are at your disposal, like the internet, like the books, like the videos, like the magazines, like the TV shows, like the podcasts. All these things are resources. You can research. You can, if you've got a tournament on a lake you've never been to, you can go on the internet and research tournament results from that lake. You can research the time of year you're going there and how tournaments were won, and you'll have a pretty good idea what to try before you even get there and be ahead of the curve. I mean, so utilize the resources. I did it all by writing it down and studying what was available, but there's so many more resources available these days to shorten that learning curve and help people eliminate the luck factor, at least diminish it. And I get a lot more satisfaction out of catching fish based on the knowledge I possess, as opposed to getting lucky. So there it is. There's my analysis on luck versus skill in fishing. At this point, for me, I believe it's a lot more skill, because I've worked for 40 years to eliminate as much luck as possible. I was grateful for all the luck I had on my side in the early years, but the more I studied it, the more my success increased. And that really taught me the luck versus skill equation. And once I realized that, I pretty much dedicated my life, my pursuits on the water, to eliminating that four-letter word and learning as much as I could so I could go out and duplicate. Which brings me back to the I'd rather be lucky than good. All right. I'd rather be good as a tournament angler, because if you're good, you can go back and duplicate and win again. And I've done that. So there it is. Now that I've explained all that, I'm curious. Did it change your opinion at all? I mean, you said you about think there's luck. A lot of luck involved.
I mean, I think that I always look at luck when I see people, like, you know, if I see a kid out there catch an accidental 24-inch brown trout, not knowing what he's doing. That's luck.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a luck situation.
Absolutely.
You know, there was a guy I saw who caught a 5-pound largemouth on a night crawler and a bobber. You know, is that luck?
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean? Luck. Like luck, right?
Sorry, you know, 100%. Yeah.
And then they swear by, I was having a lot of debates this past week about the fishing program and Cub Scouting. And the fact that, you know, I wanted to move away from drowning worms and get into plastics for these kids so they can actually catch some bass that we had that were there.
Yes. And, yes.
And some individuals.
What did I say? 100%. Yes.
That I was correct in doing so, right? I mean, you were supportive in my decision to do that.
100%.
And I had some people that were saying, well, don't you have any worms? And I'd say, no, I don't. I have plastic worms. We did use red worms on the open stream fishing. We did take them onto Point Rock Creek. And Point Rock Creek is a trout stream that runs by camp. And we cut some of the like tall grass down so the kids could actually have access to like the bank, you know?
So they had places to fish.
Yeah. But what we did in doing so, well, there's two things. So I sat out there and I had my sunglasses on and I watched that water for a good 25 minutes just staring at it. Waiting for a fish to go by, something. Give me some life. Show me. I could see some minnows, but no trout. And it was supposed to be a very good trout fishery. And so nothing on Tuesday. No, it was Monday. Nothing on Monday. Went back there on Saturday, and the kids spooked a 20-inch brown. I watched it swim upstream. Just one, though. Just one. That's all. And there was one dead one. There was a dead trout in the bottom, and there was a big brown that went by. And that dead trout wasn't there the day before either. The water temperature is very high. So I have a feeling it probably has to do with the fish kill is probably happening from the lack of oxygen.
Yeah.
But the other thing, though, and I'm not trying to crap on anyone or anything, but there was suspicion of my own that area is heavy in the Mennonite community, the Amish community.
Okay.
And those folks, from what I understand, aren't too big on following regulations on how much you keep when you catch a fish.
I have no
idea.
And
so I checked. So I checked out. Well, my thought is that they might have fished all of them out. That was my thought. And so checked out that location on Google, and there were like reviews for where I was. Okay. And the first thing on there was like, the Amish have fished every trout out of that stream. That's the first thing the guy said. So, you know. They gave an option to the camp to stock there. They said, we'll stock it at your bridge, but you have to open up access to everybody to be able to use it. And we said, no. So I will go back there. I do think that there's some large fish holding under the bridge where there's still cover by cutting down the grass.
Their shade.
Yeah. We got rid of their shade by getting rid of the grass on that one bank. So that also probably cleared them out too. There was nowhere to hide. They couldn't hide. So they moved. We essentially ruined their ecosystem in that 22. One spot. And but it is a beautiful spot. And we were using red worms for that. I was having the kids drift red worms down. But that's the right move for that water. And the kids aren't using fly rods. So of course you're going to use spinning rods and light tackle.
There's nothing worse than being in your bass boat, going down a stretch of bank, throwing all your lures in a tournament, and you see a guy sitting on the bank with a bobber.
And he pulls out a bigger fish than you did, right?
And he pulls out a 4-pound largemouth, and your buddy's going, we could have used that fish. And I look at him and say, we're supposed to be the ones who are good at this, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the large, you know, my boss is out here last week and his son caught a 5 or 6 pounder. They didn't have a scale, but it went from my boss's middle finger to 4 inches below his elbow. That's how big that bass was. And I have a photo of
it. Holy cow.
I'll send it over to you. Mind you, we haven't caught any that big out of there yet this year, but that's the second time that his son has pulled something ridiculous out of the lake. So it's funny how, and once again, on a night crawler. So was his son getting lucky, or was he using the right bait for the right time selection? He knows that night crawlers sometimes work out there.
I'm not going to throw a night crawler
ever. You'll never catch me with a night crawler on a hook ever again.
Blasphemy.
It is. Worm drowning is not fishing.
It is to me.
Worm drowning is fishing if you're like, and this is all due respect to the older gentlemen out there or ladies, you know, bobber fishing is something you do with your grandkid. You sit there and spend time with them. That's what I'd say it's for.
I'll tell you what, when I'm fishing crappie, because they feed up, they feed above
their
head.
But you're using a squirming shad. You're not throwing a worm with honor.
I'm putting plastic under a float.
Yes, that is not the same thing as drowning a worm.
It's not, because I'm not dunking night crawlers.
And you're using a slip bobber, so you're doing work while you're out there. You're jigging. You're not jigging a worm.
I'm setting the depth given what I'm fishing, and I'll suspend it. It's a perfect way to suspend a bait above crappie or even for perch. We caught a lot of them on slip floats. And strangely enough, I've been doing a lot of crappie fishing the last few weeks, and I did all my perch fishing in, you know, March and April. I never put out a slip float once. And I used to do that quite regular, but I haven't done it at all this year, and it hasn't hurt at all. I grew up as a kid watching a bobber with a piece of worm on it. That's, you know, when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. And
that's
there's
the
just
only excuse.
Something about watching that float.
Anyway, I mean, heck, when I fly fish, I use an indicator, but it's still not the same as sitting and let it sit in one spot.
Right.
You know,
with a worm slithering along the bottom.
Know, I'm using an indicator on moving water.
And they catch fish. Yes, they catch fish. But most people who go out with a night crawler on a big old bobber aren't factoring in the weather, aren't factoring in the water temperature, the direction of the sun. They're just throwing it out there and waiting for something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing against that. I have no problem with anybody else throwing a night crawler. I'm just not going to do it myself.
It's all right.
Because I've risen above that. And that's, you know, that may offend some people, but that's my view. I use nothing but artificials.
That's okay. Yep. All right. Well, if you disagree with any of what we just had to say, or if you agree,
let us know.
Give us an email, anglerwithinpodcast@gmail.com, or slide into Roy's DMs at all lowercase Roy Bilby. You'll find
him. Ran into a guy this weekend. It was his dad's 80th birthday. I haven't seen the guy for over a year. Good friend of mine. We used to do music together. And lo and behold, he's been listening to our podcast, and again, had nothing but good things to say about it. Every week, I get comments from listeners telling me how much they enjoy it. So they enjoy what they do, JD. They appreciate what we're doing, and we appreciate them for that. So thank you for listening, and we will continue to try to help you eliminate the luck factor from your fishing and plug in the skill factor, because that is how you tap into your best angler within.